FYI, this podcast contains spoilers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 472 of the podcast that goes snicked.
Snicked.
Or as I like to call it, the podcast preferred by big ass dragons.
I'm totally missing something. This is going to come clearer later on, right?
Aren't you covering Marauders or is Dan covering Marauders?
No, I'm covering Marauders.
Okay, all right. Anyway, those voices you might hear, the Escalbros are back, Dan, Georgie, and Ian, and they were nice enough to let me come back on today, so welcome back.
Yeah, you're on a probation right now.
Right.
You better behave, otherwise you're off the hook.
Right. That's okay. I'll just tell everyone that the editors changed my content later. Oh man.
What happened? I realized I haven't read one of the books. That's why that didn't make any sense to me. All right. I will be doing that in the background if I'm not paying attention. That's where I am.
That's not a bit, guys. I don't think
that is not a bit. That is me mismanaging my time.
That's all right. You got a couple of books, and this first one we're gonna sweep through anyway. So
we want to do the news first, or what are we doing here?
Yeah, we will. Yeah. So just real quick. I know I mentioned this on the end of the last couple episodes, but just again, wanted to give a heartfelt appreciation for the Escalbros and Ian for doing the episode the last time they were on. It meant a lot to me to kind of keep the podcast going during a time that I wasn't really feeling it for a couple of days, but I really appreciate these guys stepping up and just delivering a great episode. So thank you all again.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for letting us do it.
Yeah. All right. So Georgie, the aforementioned news, we don't have all the details yet. They've been kind of leaking out slowly, but I just wanted to take a minute to talk about some of the books that are coming up post and
right. So a lot of this stuff is very vague. We're in the middle of one event, and then we have two events planned right afterwards, which is Destiny of X and then like the X deaths of Wolverine.
10 deaths, 10 lives, which
right.
I'm still trying to figure out if those are two different series.
I don't know.
Or just like a flip book, maybe?
And Percy is very ambitious if that's what he's doing.
That's a break.
So there's a big sea change. We're still sort of unaware of what exactly is happening and when. But we do know that starting like March of next year, the X-Books will be as follows. Immortal X-Men, Marauders, X-Force, Knights of X, X-Men, Legion of X, Wolverine, New Mutants, and X-Men Red. There's some theories. X-Men Red is probably about Mars, I'm hoping.
That makes sense.
Right. New Mutants, we're hoping it's the same creative team. Wolverine, I don't think he's making any change. Legion of X is probably, Spurrier again, we're thinking.
I think so. And then Knights of X is a Nightcrawler one, right?
Is it?
Or is Legion of X? Which one is the follow-up to Way of X?
Probably Legion, but I don't know.
Okay.
We don't have any details yet, do we?
No, but they did have a promo poster for the
team. Yeah, I'm looking at the poster.
Nightcrawler and Juggernaut and we're on the team.
Legion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they're right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. X-Men, probably the same creative team, as far as we can tell. Knights of X, we have no idea who is on that book, so it's probably going to be Leah Williams, if not X-Men Red. I'm really fearing that X-Men Red is going to be Leah Williams, and she's just going to ruin Storm. X-Force, I don't see them making any changes. Marauders, and Immortal X-Men, we actually do have information on, so let me pull that up really quickly. Marauders will be Steve Orlando and Eleonora Carlini. Going back to the focus of the book was originally rescuing mutants around the world. We know that Kitty with her Puppy Dragon and Bishop and Psylocke and Dokken and Tempest are on here, as well as, let me get to it, Somnus, who I'm unfamiliar with. Oh, but
that's the one from the LGBT Voices mm-hmm. book. Yeah.
Right. And they're teasing that another new mutant will be a shocking mutant. Who's it going to be? Oh, the mystery. That's how they're... The PR is for this book. Well, and Aurora okay. is on this team as well. So Banshee was on the team for a minute, and now he's no longer seen anywhere, so that's a little bit disappointing.
That's a little disappointing.
But Tempest will get some time to shine, and maybe Aurora won't be, and Dokken won't be terribly misused. So I've got some hope. Do you guys like a lot of Orlando's work?
For the most part, yeah.
I'm a fan. Because I love Martian Manhunter and I love Midnighter. Ian's never read anything of his, so that's
really cool. Midnighter was really good. Yeah,
I'm just sat here in the background quietly nodding. he's gay, so hopefully, and he created the Somnus, the new gay character who apparently in love with Dokken a long time ago. Or they were in love with. That's kind of what the story was like, that those two knew each other from a while ago. Okay.
Well, it's a reason to give my support. Hopefully, it'll be good.
Yeah, maybe it'd be the queer book that isn't utterly shit. I like the lineup. Though I am getting, once we talk about it, I'm getting very much vibes of everything's going to be a team now, and all thematic ideas are thrown in a bin because Hickman has left.
It could be.
I like that they're going to try and streamline it and be like what the Marauders was originally intended to be, which is like save mutants and maybe just walk away from Emma and Sebastian being like the main focus of that entire series, really.
Right.
I think they're going to be more featured in Immortal, which we'll talk about in a second. Plus, with Emma, everything happening with Destiny here, she might be very much a changed character moving forward.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Marauders. And then Immortal X-Men. Let me pull up the page. Where did it go?
It's Karen Gillan, isn't it? And that's
I saved the info and then I lost the page.
You must have put it in a safe place.
That's very frustrating. I had the web page open and now it has disappeared into nothingness. So it is Karen Gillan and the artist who is working on Trial of Magneto, which is disappointing. Because the artwork on there has been mostly miss with a few hits. And
I said in our conversation, the only maybe silver lining is that Gillan is such a strong writer. Maybe he can give the artist more to work with.
Mm.
But we'll see.
Also, Mark Brooks is doing all the covers. His covers are gorgeous. So that's going to be...
Yes.
At least it will be lovely. And Ian Nurse... Gillan, because he likes Young Avengers and Phenogram. So there you go. There's a
great
comic book that you can actually.
Yes, what I know.
Oh, I found the page. So it's going to focus the book's going to focus on the Quiet Council and the secrets and backstabbing that's happening there.
Yeah, sounds about right up Gillan's alley. So it should be good.
So There was a great quote, if I can get to it. It's about a group of people, some of whom are convinced they're in the West Wing, some who have designs to be in House of Cards, and at least one who knows they're in Veep. Okay. And that's got to be Mr. Sinister, who knows it's all a giant joke. I think that's hilarious. And
that is funny.
If anyone has read Gillan's X-Men, was it Uncanny? Yeah. He had a lot of Sinister featured in there in interesting ways. So having him coming back to write Sinister will be a lot of fun, I think.
Well, he kind of reshaped what is mm-hmm. modern Sinister is. So, yeah that should be fun. There is a rumor that Knights of X is going to be the Excalibur replacement. So that's not confirmed, but that's what people are thinking.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I know there are rumors that Howard is back or not back, so who knows?
Right.
It seems weird because was this week the end of Hellions? It felt like the end of Hellions when I read it.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Yep, that series is done.
Is Zeb Wells not allowed to come back?
I think he's gone to Spider-Man. He's one of the rotational Spider guys right now.
He's better on Spider-Man than he has been. No, that's offensive. I'll stop. I enjoy his Ben Reilly. There you go. That's what we're going on.
Well, that's sort of all the information we know at the moment for the new series of the new line of X books, a lot of which are just starting in March. So we'll see how things go. I think we all really like Gillen. I think we're loving what New Mutants is doing. There's some optimism, but some trepidation now that it seems like Jordan White is wrestled the crown away from Jonathan Hickman. And things could be going in a it's a wait and see pattern. We're in a holding pattern right now. But
for sure.
I'm not. For a minute, I was really down. I thought, oh no, we're going back to the pre-Hickman days. But I think there's still cause to be optimistic about at least a half of what we're going to be seeing here. So,
I think a lot of it looks like it'll probably stay the course, right? You mentioned Wolverine, X-Force, those will probably kind of just be what they have been. I'm really optimistic the New Mutants, just based on fan reaction. I have no idea how it's selling.
Me neither.
But I know people seem to be really liking it as much as we are for a lot of what I read. So I'm hoping that can continue with the same creative team or creative rotation. Looking at where it makes sense to stick people, I am maybe a little more cautious that you might be right about the authorship of X-Men Red, because I don't know where else they would go unless they're not on X-Books anymore. So that'll be curious to watch. But
spoiler for Trial, but we should all forgive her for what she's done. Just like,
hey, I still just, whenever I need to be like, hey, let's be positive, I just remember that the What If Magic was one of the best comics of the last year.
I mean, it's starting to
it's hard to remember that.
The scale is starting to be very heavily shifted into the crap pile. So this
I just want them to be a bit more cohesive, the books again, because I read all the books and then I read Millions, and I just feel like everything's set in completely like months and years apart from each other. Like, I'm pretty sure like everyone's burning down Krakoa at the same time as Scarlet Witch is burning down Krakoa, at the same time as Hellions being hit, and at the same time as, and I'm like, nah, this, none of this works at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, it is hard to figure out, like, well, how does the Shadow King story relate to Inferno and Trial and Sword? Like, it does seem like very kind of disparate paths at the moment. So, and that can be okay, but I'm with Dan. I do hope it kind of pulls a little bit tighter. It doesn't have to be like super, like, I don't want to like editorial like stranglehold, but I would like a little more cohesion.
So. Also, just before we go on to one other not particularly good book, it's only Jason read Hellion.
I haven't read it yet.
I have, yeah, and actually I did a short episode on it earlier this week. So if you want to comment, I feel like it stuck a pretty good landing. I feel like the book was up and down, but I feel like it finished pretty strong.
I actually thought that it finished like it was like a different book. It finished.
So it's worth me going back in to finish it.
Like, it felt very much like it finished the first three issues. Like it finished its original
intention. Right. Yeah.
And I thought there were some sweet moments. I think the epilogue. I am not a Madeline Pryor, whatever you want to call it, fan. So the last couple of pages, I'm like, I do like that she like basically turned around and went, fuck off, Alex. that was, I do like the way she was written in the sense of like, what did she say? Brought back by another, summoned by another summons brother.
Mm-hmm.
Summons. And I was like, oh, is she going to just slap people around?
Mm.
But I did think it was weird that there was like, we just brought her back just to please Alex, like a sex doll. And it was, that was the most weird sort of plot point for me, because they're quite desperate to get her back in the books, clearly. It was just
they are.
And there was a lot of like, toing and froing in other books, where it's like, we don't bring back clones, we don't bring back this, these people are pretty evil, maybe we shouldn't bring them back straight away. And it, with Madeline, it's just like, screw it.
I think I don't know what they'll do, and I feel like she's getting on the wait list to burn down Krakoa. That seems to be going
right.
But I do feel like there's potential to be a really good story about agency with her. I don't know if anyone's ever going to really tackle it in the right way, or if that's what they're planning to do right now. But like you said, because she was kind of brought back A, without really her consent, and B, to kind of appease somebody else, like almost like an offering to somebody. And I think there could be a really good story about turning that on his ear and saying, you know, I'm going to take control of my own life regardless of what y'all did. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they decide to do. But
I would love to see her in like a, written by Asperia in Legion's book, and to deal with like, as Legion's thought of dealing with healing the psyche of Krakoa. And
right.
Making it would be interesting to see Madeline in that, such a tortured soul in right. that kind of pair view. But I feel like they're just going to throw her, because she's slightly magical, into whichever book deals with magic.
Maybe, maybe.
Yeah, naked as possible. It'll feel like Claremont's Excalibur at some points. She'll be like the kitty. Bit consensual. Anyway, let's move on to the other book that isn't good.
So. Okay. All right, well, yeah, so what we're going to talk about first, and not at all foremost, is the Trial of Magneto, number 4. And this is, well, first of all, it wastes a page with a big, giant, spirally paragraph that I gave up on reading. But the creatives are, so this is Time to Face the Truth, or Verdigris, written by Lee Williams, art by Lucas Vernick and David Messina. Colors by Edgar Delgado, letters by VCs Clayton Cowles, designed by Tom Mueller, and then cover is by Valerio Skitty and Edgar Delgado. The cover is fine. It's got variant Scarlet Witches in a statue pose. I don't know. Like a weird tree branch Scarlet Witch that doesn't seem to relate to the story at all, but... It's fine. I mean, it's a fine
cover. Surprise.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch is a Groot.
Scarlet Witch Groot. Wait, are we doing Jason Aaron's Avengers now?
Oh, boy.
What if? I feel like his whole thing is what if.
What yes.
if now? But, all right. Well, so in this one, we have the Trial of Magneto, which is he even in this issue? Yeah, he is. Okay. All right. Barely. Yeah, but basically Scarlet Witch somehow has all these, like, her past, present, and future. So the one that was murdered was either not her whole self, or the one that was resurrected was definitely not her whole self. And at the end, she comes together, and she knows who attacked her. And apparently some of the X-Men know, because they're squared off ready to fight their teammates. We also find out that if the metal was magic, it doesn't have to be Magneto or Polar. That has magic power and knows where to find metal. Yeah, 2 out of 6 claws for me. What do y'all think? I mean, this story's a mess. It's just a straight mess.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm going to say is if. The internet website that me and Georgie thought were actually bought out by the X office just reviews this negatively, you know something's wrong.
Yes, if Adventures in Poor Taste doesn't like it, you know that something bad has happened.
I don't even know. None of the words on the front cover make any sense. Even the and of are in the book. So, like, and I am sorry, but how many times are we going to get Wanda giving some sort of weird apology for murdering millions of mutants by just going, oh, I'm sorry, I forgive myself again. And where was Leah Williams for the past like decade or so, where we've gone through Scarlet Witch's like semi-redemption already like three times. So like, right. It's completely ignores all of that. And for this, I hope she's gone off to do like a Scarlet Witch miniseries, and that's the thing she really wants to do, because I won't read it and I'll be better for it. So.
Yeah. I've just flipped through the book, and yeah, the only time I see Magneto is on the very last page, and he doesn't say anything. So this really is, this feels like, it's more like Leah Williams forgiving herself publicly for what she did at the end of her last book, is how I interpret it. Like, I'm sorry, but I forgive myself, so please, you should forgive me too. We're good now, right? That's how I read it.
The only scene I enjoyed was a Rogan Gambit scene.
Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't even feature the her X Factor anymore. They sort of like Tangel. I don't even know who is this blonde woman that's like, how dare you? That like near the end, like accuses people.
Oh no, that's not a blonde woman. That's Doug, isn't it?
That's Doug.
Yes. So once again, why I'm not excited for this artist to be doing the Kieran Gillen book.
Oh, but which artist are we on at that point? Is that Vernick or is that
I don't know.
Messina? Man, I don't know either.
This whole book is not, like, there's not been a single book where I was like, wow, great job.
Right.
And also, can I just say, I don't think Billy and Tommy would address Wanda in the manner that they address her here. Like, really shower and, like, cut her down to pieces. I'm like, I don't feel like that's what they would do.
From what I've gotten from Young Avengers, no, he wouldn't.
Yeah. So any guesses on who did it? Because it looks like they're kind of got Emma in shadow here. I'm not really certain who they're like, oh, it was you all along. Any ideas?
At this point, I want it to be Magneto, just so like the book has at least has the namesake. I don't care. I actually don't care. Why couldn't we have just had that beautiful moment in Giant Size X-Men between Magneto and
right.
Have that be her, like, beginning of her story. This ignores even that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is a horrible piece of work. Again.
Yeah, I'll give it a 1 out of 6 claws as well. It's been a disaster.
You guys talked me down. Yeah. It's your job to talk me back up or leave it there.
I have to say, I think I made the best decision out of all of you.
And you just skipped it? Well, then let's skip ahead to New Mutants number 23. So this is Fall of the House of Shadows. Pretty cool name. Or The Truth Shall Set Them Free. Written by Vita Ayala. Art by Rod Reyes. Letters by VCs Travis Aglanum. Tom Mueller does the design. Martin Simmons does the cover. We've been enjoying his covers for the most part. This one's kind of the New Mutants of Chucky cover. Right. But it's not bad.
I like it. It's quite sinister.
It's creepy, yeah. But I want to own that doll of magic. You put that somewhere and it will just be amazing to have.
I do think James's hair is luscious. Warpath's hair is astonishing. Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's got some lovely volume to it.
Yep.
Could you imagine putting that Warlock doll in someone's crib? Oh, God. Well, my synopsis is going to be pretty short, but don't let that undersell how much I love this book. So, all right. The New Mutants and the Lost Club trip literally through the astral plane, finally helping Amul-Farrakh banish, maybe, the last vestiges of the Shadow King. It's existential but engaging. I love the text pieces in this are like a playwright, like the manuscript of a drama or a stage play. And then I put in the group chat, how does Rod Reyes keep getting better? Like, I'm just blown away by the visuals, and particularly knowing that he does his own colors, like the color work in this book as well. It's just, this is phenomenal. What do you guys
think? Should be getting an award for this book, for this issue, honestly. This book in general, but what are the awards called again?
The movies? My awards? Oh, you mean the real awards. Okay.
what are they called again?
I don't remember.
The Eisners.
Thank you. Sorry.
Oh, the Eisners. Yes.
Yes. Yes. He should be getting an Eisner for art for this series. This issue especially. Just spectacular.
Some really lovely. I love the shadow creeping over the page where they're fighting him, and the shadows are like sort of like tendrils are going over the each individual panel, mm-hmm. like the framing panels. It is really beautiful to look at, and crazy and insane. It's bizarre because it's got shades of horror. Then it has really warm panels of like really nice character happiness, and it's got just a fantasy. The tour de force, really.
Mm-hmm. And he's able to shift between styles, artistic styles, in a very like uniform but also unique way. Like there's that panel where she's reaching out, Danny's reaching out to like touch Rain's cheek, and it feels very horror, and then it's like suddenly very loving, and then it's back to horror, like the very panel right afterward. This was one of the most spectacular things I've ever read, to be honest. This might be up in like my top five issues I've ever read in terms of artwork.
So I'm gonna make a bold question mark statement, but I feel like right now, at this current run of New Mutants, is the best it's been since Claremont and Sienkiewicz.
That's a lot of New Mutants.
Yeah.
That's it.
There's been some good stuff. I'm not saying I'm not trying to say all that's been crap. There's been a lot of up and down in that time period. A lot of it's been pretty good. But this is the most I've enjoyed this title in a generation or more. I mean, it's really, really good. And it's hitting all, I don't know, it's just working for me.
Look, I do think it is quite excellent. I do want to just a moment of remembrance for when Hickman wrote the first five or six issues.
Sure, sure. That was good too.
That was good. I mean, it's not. It's a very different style of book, but was uh-huh. also, you know, when we started off, it's like, wow, this is a highlight. But yeah. I mean, where we are now is just so unique and wonderful. And you know, I don't want to deride the writer too much. There was a lot of sort of word salad here at the end, and sort of overhanded overhanded dialogue or overwritten here. But for the most part, I think they did a really excellent job of tying this story up, because that is one hard thing to do story wise to tie up in an issue. So I think they did a good job, even if it was at moments. A little bit of too much dialogue.
Well, they definitely. I mean, we've made this comparison before. They have a little bit of the Claremont getting paid by the word. It feels like sometimes, you know, kind of that. But that's not a slam. I think it's a style, and their style is very verbose. And I would agree with you a little bit, Georgie, that sometimes. With such an expressive art style that can get in the way. Like you can have some of these really beautiful panels, like towards the last page where they're trying to calm Rain down. There's like a couple of really colorful panels where they're fighting the different werewolves mm-hmm. or different wolf forms. And there's literally like those two panels on the bottom where
yes,
you have this like gorgeous pink and red, like almost watercolor hue. Mm-hmm. And there's just these stark white word balloons all over it.
Yes. And there's a couple of dialogue of like, hey, Rain, watch out. I've got it, Danny. I got it. Punch. And you're like, oh, that was a little bit. There was a couple. It was just a few that stood out. That's all.
Yeah. I do also love that even though we're still going with Scout, that when Gabby takes on animal form, she is a badger. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I talked over Dan and Ian.
Yeah, sorry, me too. So let's go back to them.
It's all good. Is it, the only time I've been this impressed about something is... I don't have an answer to that. Like, I have seen some lovely comics, I have seen some horrible ones, but I don't think anything can touch what this has done artistically. That I've read.
That's fine.
I don't expect your wealth of knowledge, Dan, of comics to not have something that can equal it. But the poor little peasant me here hasn't read many. But it's truly a work of art.
Yeah, like, you guys have said it all. It is a little overwrought in places. I think it's probably the most wordy it's been in a little while. But the text boxes do really stand out in certain pages. But on the whole, it's got some, it just looks lovely. And it is just a really fun book. And it manages to, like, the whole arc has managed to redefine the Shadow King's origins and put a stop to him within, like, a couple of issues. So I appreciate that.
And also, I feel like it has some nods to the Legion TV show and how they treat the Shadow King a little bit, and some of the visual cues and some of the personality a little bit. Like, so it's a very interesting take.
And it feels like everyone's a part of the, it's not just New Mutants as in the original cast. It is all of the, like, the little guy and, like, the Shadow King's, like, manipulate people he manipulated. It has some great moments for everyone. And I think it's just a really nice read. And I'm looking forward to where it goes next. But knowing our luck, it'll go on hiatus for, like, until March.
I know.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is anyone not giving this 6 out of 6 claws? Anyone going down to 5? I won't allow lower than 5. Just
you're off the podcast.
I think, personally, I think it's, I don't know why, but I think it's 5. It might be. My big kid, I've had my booster vaccine and don't feel particularly well.
All right. Anyone else going with Dan?
No, I will give it a 6. This was, I always highlight the negative more than the positive, but I thought it was really excellent comics. Wonderful job by everyone involved. Excited. Hopefully that the same team is still on the book moving forward. And even if we have it a couple months off, that means that they're coming back and Reyes is doing all the artwork moving forward and Ayala is still on this, then I would be fine with that.
Yeah, and I don't remember their name right this second, but I'm okay if Reyes gets the occasional break by the artist that did those couple of fill-in issues, like, what was it, 4 or 5 issues ago? Like, they were pretty decent, too. And not too far off in style. So if we get that kind of same pattern, that's what I want out of this book. So
I was thinking, someone mentioned this, that they tweeted our Excalibur Bros Twitter saying that they were starting up and they're like, oh, I got to read this new Exiles book. It looks interesting. And I'm like, oh, yeah, and there's even a fill-in with Reyes. I'm like, oh, Reyes used to be a fill-in guy, and now he's like the superstar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. And I hope he's getting the love he deserves.
Yeah.
He deserves every ounce of it.
Although Dan doesn't seem to think so. Whatever, Dan.
All right. Well, George, did you have time to flip through Marauders? That's where
I did. No, I went through it. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. All right, Dan, well, you're up with Marauders 26.
Okay. Well, so everyone but me voted 6 for that.
Yes, you were wrong.
I didn't even give 5 buttons knowing that it was 6, and that is the end of the story.
So, Marauders 26, many happy returns, or Duggan has left and can't be bothered to write anymore. Depends on how you feel. Writer is Joey Duggan. Matteo Lolli is the artist. Rain Benvenuto is colorer. Corey Petit, or VC's Corey Petit, is colorer. And on design, and it is Dortmer and Matt Wilson, Milton and Megan Hetrick. Did anyone see the variant cover?
I did not.
But I like Hetrick, so I might have to look it out. But yes, the cover is Iceman filling Fing Fang Foom face with ice.
So in his mouth, that's right.
I actually really like this action cover. It reminds me that Dortmund does action, not just really stylish people in clothes. So I was quite happy. Anyone else?
It made me miss him doing sequential art. It really did. And not that his other covers that we've seen on this book have been gorgeous, almost without exception. But this one, probably more than any of the others, made me really want to dig out his Thor issues and just see him do like actual interior comic art.
For sure.
I read War of Kings just for his art. So was it War of Realms? I can't remember. There's so many wars of. Anyway, right. So, is that the... So the variant cover Ian's just shown me is a very, very sexy Emma Frost sat in like a gate, cocoon gate throne.
Okay.
I really like it.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So we start with Emma and Sebastian resurrecting Leland and showing him the sites, the old mansions that Hellfire mentions. We have a little bit of a flashback to when he died in front of Nimrod. And basically they show him Krakoa. He's all happy, he's crying, he's totally down for the mutant nation. Then we meet our marauders on an actual galleon which floats in the middle of the sea, who are then attacked by none other than Fing Fang Foom. And it's a big old fight, and Iceman looks like he's been killed, but he's super powerful and becomes a giant and just batters Fing Fang Foom and then throws beer in his face. And that's about it. Oh no, wait, sorry. Leland and Sebastian get drunk, have a little scuffle, then laugh. And we find out a big thing, which I totally forgot about until I'm just looking at the pages now. I totally forgot about this, is that Shinobi Shaw isn't Sebastian Shaw's child, it's Leland's child, which just blows Shinobi's, and we just leave that there. We're just going to leave that plot right there, because Leland has other places to be, because he's now the recurring representative for the United Nations. And we end with the woman that I've totally forgotten her name, who teleports around in Washington Square Park, and she beats people up because she doesn't want people near Krakoa gates. And I've totally forgotten who she is.
Chantel Lords, is that her name?
Ah, Lords. There we go. So yes, it's pretty quick. It feels like the book. For me personally, it feels like the books. I enjoyed it because Iceman's actually allowed to do something.
Right.
26 issues. He's allowed to do more than just smile in the background. And it was nice to see him power. It's interesting to bring Leland back and have someone in the United Nations, which makes me think that whatever Duggan's planning for the end of this book will go over to whatever to X-Men, maybe?
Or yeah, whatever, probably.
Whatever book, because clearly Duggan really wants to do a Hellfire book and use the Hellfire. It's been the whole thing for like 20 some issues. So I'm assuming like Knights of X might be the Hellfire Club, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
That'd be interesting.
Maybe Duggan's writing two books. But it does also feel like the book is clearly running very slowly to its inevitable end, or like this chapter's ending before it gets restarted.
Yeah, it feels like he didn't have a story for a last, five issue arc, so he just did a bunch of short stuff.
Yeah, because it feels more like the energy isn't there anymore, and it's like tiny pieces. Like, to my knowledge, you don't drop a massive bomb like Leland is actually Shinobi's Barbo, unless you're actually going to follow that through soon.
Right.
Interesting. I really like the art. I think it's bright and shiny. It really worked. Yes. I thought seeing Bobby just cut loose was quite fun. As usual, Lolly does really good character work. But I found it very middle of the road, apart from the cover. I'll stop now.
Ian?
I enjoyed it. It was fun. There were shiny colours and it made me happy.
good assessment. I really love the middle part with the Fing Fang Foom attacking the liquor ship, the booze cruise. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I thought the Hellfire stuff was interesting enough. And I was glad to see Lolly back. I couldn't care less about the epilogue, but we'll see where it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the Shaws have never been something I'm that excited about. I just had fun with Iceman being able to, like, be a real character again for a minute. Yeah. Is he on the next team? I don't remember.
Nope. I don't think so.
Oh, all right. But he is featured on that big cover, so maybe he's
doing something. Right. We gotta see where he lands, I guess.
I mean, this is just like a fun, let's have a monster fight. You know, we had a bunch of monster fights in Trial of X that were, Trial of Magneto, that were not nearly as fun or engaging visually as this
one. They were soulless, and this was a lot of fun.
This was just fun with, like, oh, we bring this guy back, oh, that's interesting. Hellfire Club, that could be interesting. Planting some seeds. It felt more like the start of a series than, like, the end of a series, if that makes sense. But it was just a fun book that I'm glad that I read, but I was also able to read in, like, 3 minutes. So take that for what you will.
All right. I feel like I'm going to be the one on the high end because I just had more fun, and maybe you don't come with me. I still gave it 5 out of 6 claws.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I just enjoyed the middle part enough to agree with you. 5 out of 6. I don't care about the beginning and end.
Fair enough.
I give it a 4 out of 6. I think enjoyable and fun, but I'm probably going to forget it, and it feels like it's not really that consequential to what this series was doing.
Sure.
I feel like a 3 out of 6 because I forgot about it until I had to read it. to be fair, I've been complaining about Iceman, so I should really like be happy for the scraps that I'm throwing. But
I don't know. I enjoyed the fight, but I could have just watched. Like the front cover, it has more drama.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't know. I'm just being grumpy.
All right. Well, I was telling the Sky Bros before the show. One of the things I enjoyed most about the fill-in episode they did was having Ian level up and do full synopsises. So Ian, we're going to jump to you for X-Men number 5.
Yay! So, let me remember how this goes.
You do that. I thought it. Oh, I was helping.
I'm just trying to be dramatic here. Adding effect, darling.
Fine.
But no, yeah. So, we have X-Men number 5. Now you've done it.
Or Fearless Chapter 5, Don't Piss Off Polaris.
Okay, I have to admit, I love that title. I didn't even realize that was a title.
It's hard to know what they're doing on these books. It feels like they all have two titles. But yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, Ian.
That's okay. So we have the writer, Jerry Dugan. We have an artist. I apologize because I'm probably going to butcher these names. Javier Pina and Z. Carlos. Color artist Eric.
Sorry, I'm Arseniega.
Arseniega, thank you, because I had no idea. letterer VCs Clayton Cowles. Design Tom Muller. Cover artist Pepe Larez and Marty Gracia. Is there anything else I need to cover? I'm good to go.
But I really want to see the Jamie McKelvey.
Wait, there's a McKelvey alternate cover.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm down for that.
We'll figure that out. What is the cover anyway?
The cover is a masked person with red on their face and a scalpel towards X-Men being held by a evil, like, hentai demon.
True.
I don't know if hentai has ever been mentioned on the
I apologize, it's a perfect opportunity I couldn't resist.
To be fair, I now see it. I'll never know.
Ooh, this McKelvey variant is Rogue giving Laura a fastball special, and it's awesome.
Aw. Oh.
That should have been
better. I'll give her fun with that one. Yes. So Cyclops and Laura are trying to resist, but they're going to be going under the knife whether they like it or not.
I don't. Does this happen in this book? I don't
know.
No.
I think it's more the intentions of whoever this evil person is.
Right. It's symbolic. It's symbolic.
Well, at least these characters are in this book, unlike a different book.
Right, so let's begin. We start off with a person which I don't recognize, fighting other people that I don't recognize.
You don't know Sunfire?
That's the first time I've seen him look like that. The last time I saw him was him announced in like a dapper costume.
And he's mainly been on fire recently.
I generally thought Cyclops had a new costume.
Okay. It's not unreasonable. It's not unreasonable.
Yeah, I can see that.
Until I realized he was laid unconscious on the floor. Yes. So, person is like, we are fighting people because they've come back yet again, because everything comes back in the X-Men. He goes, "I'll fight me," gets tranked like the rest of the team. And at this point, it's coincidentally perfect timing where Polaris decides to wake up. And she's like, "Oh no, people are unconscious. What shall I do? Oh wait, I've got a metal body here I can throw around." Then it cuts back to Polaris being like, "Please no, don't pick me." And Jean doing her usual thing and just been like, "No, you're doing it, end of story." And then she just has to like smile about it. Then we cut for reasons to Polaris now in a nuclear plant having to remove metal pipes that are going to destroy the place, and scientists being, well, bossy. She just ends up taking them all out, gives all the scientists a lovely little show, which will probably kill them in about 5 years' time. And then just gives them to Kitty to pilot a ship to just dump it in the sun, like any reasonable person should do.
When in doubt, dump it in the sun.
Well, it's Goku's logic. If you can't beat it, put it in the sun. Then we cut back to the fight, which this time people are actually awake for. And there's all sorts of animals that are just trying to kill the X-Men. Polaris finds a cute, what is it, steel terrier? I mean, it's got a camera. And it's like, "Oh no, camera." Evil person's like, "You're clever. You see me. Kill seal dog." Laura's like, "You cold." And then she's like, "No, want me." It was them. Then cuts back to the current time where I literally just had her name and I forgot her name.
Polaris,
thank you. Is wielding Laura like a weapon. And she's a weapon in any day.
Like a weapon X?
I missed that opportunity.
That's why we got Georgie.
23 more.
Oh, she's what? X-23. You've got 23 more. If I can explain it, it's not a joke.
True.
I apologize for this terribleness.
No, I
Then evil people are like, "Let's blind them. They can't do anything." And plus, like, "Please, I can see you through magnets."
Yeah. I wish he said that. I can see.
I wish he would have said MagnaVision, but
MagnaVision. Yeah.
That's why we have Jason.
Yeah, on his own real podcast. Jokes. I just have dad jokes.
At this point, Laura finally wakes stuff, and she decides to take a sign and beat them all to death with it. Then they're all just like, yeah, you've all lost. Picking each other up, walking off, like, yay, we've won, but what's happening? Then Polaris decides to talk to Jean, asks her why she changed her vote, and she's like, I know you really want to do it. And that's about as much explanation as you get. Then we fast forward to the mutants feeding the homeless.
Yeah.
Because why not share their wealth with everyone? Then you get reporter number 79.
Ben Urich. He's super... It doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's the reporter of the Marvel Universe.
I said, come on, he looks like Clark Kent.
A little bit.
He grabs Cyclops, like, come on, let's go talk. And is like, I know you're reviving yourselves, mutants. This is going to be the story of the decade. And of course, there is weird person with mask that is unknown watching them and listening to the entire conversation. Eventually, said reporter walks off, being like, give it a few days. Give me a comment if you've got any. End of issue.
There we go.
All right.
That was a train wreck.
No, it was great.
Okay.
I feel like I'm not slamming this arc. It wasn't bad, but man, I miss when Roz is not on this book.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking what this could have looked like. And again, not bad. There's nothing. I think the flashback to the Hellfire Club, I didn't really enjoy that art, but most of the art was okay. But I'm just thinking of, like, particularly because my favorite part was Polaris using Laura like it's kind of a magnetic puppet. And I just keep thinking, man, what would that look like if Roz did that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's good. But
I mean, there are a couple panels that I really did enjoy. There's the one where they're flying in the stuff into the sun and Lorna has her sunglasses on. It's a tiny little panel, but it's pretty spectacular and great for her character. And there are a couple, like, fun moments between Laura and Lorna and where it was nice for Laura to be like, look, Sink, we got to talk after this. He's like, yeah, we do. The moment where Miss Marvel, which we love to call her, and Lorna are talking, and she's like, you changed my mind, which is very you. I thought that was great. The other thing I want to mention is when Jean's like, oh, that man is in trouble. That man is trouble. And Em's like, yeah, but which man do you mean? Cyclops or Ben? So there was a couple, like, fun moments. I thought it was a nice way to feature Lorna. And I'll let you guys talk about the artwork some more.
I just felt, I guess the easy way I can put this is middle of the road with it. It's like there was some fun moments, but I didn't find it neither here nor there. Didn't look bad, didn't look great to me. So it's just sort of like, I read it.
Oh my.
There were some visual gags I thought were pretty good. After the fight with Laura, like, kneeling and picking shrapnel out of her body, and then literally throwing a Reaver in the dumpster, like those were kind of some of my highlights.
Oh yeah, that was a good moment.
I actually really enjoy, not the flashback art, but I enjoy quite a lot of the art. I think it's the color work is really lovely. I love the I'm not a math a fan of green, but I'm actually really liking, like, the tone of green and the idea that Laura's got, like, a Green Lantern-esque energy glow around.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I really like the fields, and I kind of really dig in Polaris's look, especially in this issue. It's nice to see him do something. It's also nice to see Duggan continue his Laura won't do anything apart from be an action toy, which literally manifests on the page. I'm it may be because I'm hurt from that Bendis moment where Jean outs Iceman, but every time she, like, someone, I'm like, Jean, why can't we have X-Men Red Jean? Like,
right. I miss X-Men Red Jean. Best Jean ever.
it felt a bit weird that, like, and it, I don't know if it's taken a little bit of agency away from Lana's desire to be an X-Man. Like, she's got, throughout the series, she's got, like, sort of a reluctant hero vibe going on, like, with her shades and stuff, and, like, playing it cool. And this kind of, like, even, it kind of brings all of that away by just going, oh, Jean helped change my mind. And it just, it's just like...
I don't know. Did you feel that way? It didn't feel... It felt like Lorna coming into her own to me. Like, yes, you helped me. You switched my vote, but that it, I am realizing, yes, I do really want to be on the team, and this is what I can do on the team, and this is why I'm useful and a good character.
I think it's context. I kind of agree with both of you. I think for this particular story beat, it is Lorna, Polaris, kind of reclaiming, like, okay, you did do the right thing this time. But I think, to Dan's point, though, with just the history of...
Sure.
Not just G, but just X-Men history in general, of people constantly being mind-controlled and manipulated telepathically. It's like, it kind of feels like, well, wouldn't it have been better to just let Lorna have kind of grown into this on her own? Like, maybe another character talked her into it, and she reluctantly agreed, and then came back and said, you know what? You were right. I'm glad you talked me into it. May have been a little better played, but, I mean, I do agree with George, though. I mean, this is her at the end, taking ownership of her own destiny and agency, and that part is fun. And I really like the focus on her as well. It's been a while.
Besides, it's nice. Okay.
I think we were about to say the same thing. It's nice to have a focus on her that's not just her being batshit crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy the fact that she actually feels, out of all of them, like a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Like a contemporary superhero. Mm-hmm. Whereas, no offense to the rest of the team at the moment, the rest don't, like, feel like this, because they're supposed to be like a premier team now, aren't they? They're supposed to be there with the FF and Avengers and such stuff. Whereas I feel like Lorna, not only visually, but sort of like comes across like an actual badass, almost like the Deus Ex 4 thing going on. Whereas I want to see that from the rest. I want some of the other characters to actually, you know, maybe we'll get a remember his name, Ian, Sunfire. Maybe we'll get a son so that Ian can actually know who he is.
Right. So I love Sunfire.
Get a nice sync issue, or maybe Laura will do something other than just slash at things. but no, I did really enjoy this, actually. I was there. I'm obviously burnt by Jean's say.
No, I get that. I understand. But also, at least this time, it wasn't like, I'm trying to keep this a secret and I'm not ready for it. It was like, Lorna's like, I really want this, but should I? It feels a little bit different than like outing someone, is all I'm saying.
Right.
It's near as bad as that issue where Jean and Xavier like have a talk just before Onslaught, and it's really, really... Oh. So... It's not that bad. It could be worse. Right.
Yeah, it could be worse. I do feel like, I know we're only 5 issues in on this series, but this felt like the most focused issue so far.
Sure.
I'm just going to jump in and say I'm giving it 5.
Me too. In spite of some of my artistic misgivings, I enjoyed it. I like the way they finally landed on what they're going to kind of do with this whole, we've had these like one-page teasers of like Ben Urich. Well, what am I going to do? Well, I think they're resurrecting themselves, and to finally have him confront Cyclops, I felt like it was actually a pretty strong scene. And it's very reportery, like, hey, I'm giving you a heads up. I got this story. You can't refute it. Do you want to say anything about it? You got a couple of days before I publish it. You know, it felt very kind of real-worldy to me, or at least. I say that. I've never worked for a paper. It felt very much like the media and reporters are portrayed. I enjoyed that part more than I had in the last couple issues. Some of the random fighting felt more just together this time. I don't know.
Also, the Ben Urich stuff reminds me very much of like the PR nightmares that the Avengers used to go through in Bruce X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
And it made me feel, that's another thing that made me feel like it's more of a superhero book, which it's supposed to be, than like a Kukoan book. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Maybe you guys talk me up. I was going to do 4. I guess I'll give it a 5. yeah, I'll give it a 5. Yeah.
Well, you can go. He might talk you back down. Where are you?
Honestly, I think I was just being a bit grumpy when I first read it, and you all actually warmed me up as well. But I'll go first, and I'll go 4.
What were you going to do it beforehand?
3.
Oh, okay.
I was going to literally maybe physically.
I guess I'm using the word middle of the road. How have you not seen 3?
The signs are all there, Dan. He is right.
I was just seeing 2. But,
I am not that harsh. Yeah.
Awesome. I feel like we're all at least on a somewhat same page. This book seems to be gaining a little bit of traction. So hopefully that'll continue.
Right.
All right. Well, now to a book that I feel like is coming towards its crashing end.
Right.
Sword number 10. Georgie, what do you got for us?
Number 10, writer Al Ewing, artist Jacopo Comagni. I don't know if it's Comagni or Comagni. Colors by Fernando Cifuentes of Photo Bunker Studios. Photo Bunker, letters by VCs Ariana Mayer, design Tom Muller. Special thanks to Abigail Johnson for things we don't know. Cover by Stefano Caselli and Java or Hava Tartaglia. And on the cover, it's sort of the standard superhero cover. We've got Cable and WizKid and Storm looking in different ways in ominous poses as something crashes in the foreground. It's pretty meh to me, the cover.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I like the WizKid looking at Sword Base 1 exploding, but other than that, I'm like, meh. Mm.
I see it, and I think of like those old school like games posters.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Before I get into it, I want to mention there's a new design for Storm in the next book, X-Men Red, which looks great, but here's the thing. I really, really like the costume she has here as the regent. It's like regal. It feels very much like the theme of I'm managing a whole world, where her new costume, if you guys have seen it, just looks like she's another member of an X-Men team. So I know people are like going apeshit over that cover, but I just want to say I'm not sure thematically if it makes a lot of sense.
Isn't it? Was that one designed by McKelvey?
Dotterman. I like it, but I agree with Georgie. I would have preferred a little more time with this one.
Yeah, the new one reminds me of like a modern version of the one where she has the lightning bolt all the way down.
Yeah.
But I like the new one, but I didn't know everyone was going ape shit. As long as she still has, her hair still looks like a cloud, I don't mind.
All right, so last time on Sword, we found out WizKid was a double agent, and we start the book here with some thirst trap pics of WizKid waking up in the morning, and he's like, you want to know me? And it's a really nice moment, because you thought like, oh no, they brought this character back just to ruin him, but it's a good issue of just sort of understanding his thought process. Everyone is always trying to figure out what he's doing. He's dyslexic, but he's also sort of a genius. He's got the injury that can't really be fixed, so people are wondering why he doesn't just go through the not the gauntlet, what is it? The
resurrection protocols.
Right, and like they say pop his resurrection cherry, but he doesn't want to unless he has to. Like he's got, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily contradictions, but he's more complicated than just a smart guy in a wheelchair, and we actually get to see that finally in an issue. And then that I really appreciated in this book. There's a conflict on Mars. Storm shows up to beat up these like no-name villains, and we find out that there's a transmitter, and they're going to send more. So Storm tries to blow them all up, but it's too late, and more villains are summoned. They're sort of like clone monster villains. Meanwhile, on the base, WizKid implements his plan. He takes out Cable, who I kind of like how they describe this. You know, he met Cable when Cable was young, and so he looked up to WizKid when he was young, so now old man Cable still has that sort of like respect for WizKid, which I thought was a nice way of dealing with the timelines. He manipulates Cable's techno body to take him out. He crashes the space station before going on over to Orcus and meeting Gyrick, and Gyrick's like, why would you ever do this? And WizKid feeds him a lie that he knows Gyrick will believe. And he's like, look, mutants aren't perfect, but, you know, I'm the second command of a space station. I get to do this and that. Why would I ever turn my back on these people? And then you see that this is all was a plan by our tiny, tiny, tiny green-haired sword leader who's like, we got stuff to do. I like that final page. We've got the smile of WizKid.
Yeah.
The smirk. You do feel like this, I mean, we know this series isn't continuing, but it does feel like it's leading up to a conclusion. However, and not to go on way past the book, this feels like another casualty to Hickman leaving, where it started off with, look at all these amazing ideas we can tackle. And then Hickman left, and they're like, well, we don't want to tackle ideas anymore. Can you do some like action superhero stuff? And this is where we're ending. So right. I'm kind of disappointed that that's where the book headed. So much promise. But as an individual issue, I really appreciated this. The artwork is sort of not great with faces, and it can look a little too simple and flat sometimes. But I really appreciated this issue. What did you guys think?
I really liked it, to be honest. I didn't care as much about the generic villains killing the Shi'ar last issue. I felt like this really turned it around and gave it – kind of tied it into the overall sword narrative a little better, gave it some purpose. I love this book focusing and being told through the perspective of WizKid. I think that sold it to me a lot. I don't know if this much. It's probably somewhat a casualty of Hickman leaving. Definitely a casualty of Ewing following behind him and leaving. I'm gonna miss his writing and his kind of take on his corner of the X-Men universe. But I feel like this was a stellar issue. Even I agree with you. Some of the art is a little simplistic in some of the body language and facial expression.
Yes, but
I feel like otherwise it's pretty. I mean, it's pretty clean, and some of the colors really pop for me. And this one that's a Proto Bunker guy. Okay. But yeah, no, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Danny, what did you guys think?
To be honest, I really enjoyed it. I haven't, obviously, once WizKid was introduced, I was like, who is this? So I right. actually have a moment about them. And how they feel, think, and much like what you already said, it sells the issue. And when I look back to this, I'm not going to remember the fact that Storm kicks some ass. I'm going to remember WizKid.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it because it plays like a Saturday morning TV show. Like a closer split explains it all, but like WizKid explains it all. And I feel like you could almost hear. Like, I'll see this on screen as like him like narrating it. Like he would even look to the camera and everything pauses around it. It's bittersweet because I am utterly gutted that this is when we get WizKid's like sort of modern character. Right. And the book is gone. And I am like, please tell me WizKid is going to be placed in the hands of someone good and is going to be in a book. But I feel like he's not going to be. He's just probably going to be glorified tech support later on, which, to be fair, Ewing just used him as glorified tech support until this issue. So, but it's such a beautiful book. I think the ending is so Abigail Brand that it's just perfect. Like it's a perfect plot, and you know she's been planning this, whatever this mission is, from like day one essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now that it's revealed that it's going to infiltrate Orcus and all that crap and. Bring Gyrick to crashing down, mainly out of revenge, it would seem, because she hates Alpha Flight. But I do absolutely appreciate WizKid to the point where I forgot Storm was in this book. I read it a while. I forgot to, I actually deleted it by accident before the podcast, like a week or so ago. I've only just looking through the book, like now in front of Ian. And I just remembered it being WizKid isn't evil, and it's a really good WizKid story. Yeah. And it looks great. I think the actual art is very Saturday morning cartoon, which really like,
yeah,
went my idea of, like, really like solidified in my head of like what it was trying to do. And sure. The last panel is my favorite superhero panel of the year. Just it's pure comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tiny with a jetpack flying next. It's just pure unadulterated childlike comic books. And I really, really love it. I do.
I get what you're saying about the artwork. I think it's the Cable that model that really gets me. I think that one really,
a little too goofy looking.
Yeah, there's something off. It doesn't quite fit in the same artistic world as everyone else for me.
We'll see what Grant says about Cable. Grant, we're eagerly wait your thumbs up or thumbs down on Cable in this book.
I get it. But as a man that doesn't care for Cable, he just looks like a man with gray hair, and that was fine. That works. You forgot he was in it. You forgot Cable was in it. Obsessed on, but maybe he is forgettable as a character. Anyway, when someone says Cable, I just envision pouches with guns, not an actual person.
Walking pouch. Cargo pouch. Cargo pouch with a gun.
That should be his new book. Anyway.
Tell him a new novel.
All right. Well, what do you guys want to rate this then?
So I know with some of my misgivings on the art, I should give it 5, but I enjoyed it too much. I'm going to give it 6 out of 6 claws.
Nice.
I'm going to give it 6 because I know I'm a little disappointed that we might not get this ever again, but it felt like a flash in the pan character study, which read like very nostalgic for me, and there's like. Mm-hmm. 90s sort of way, and I really enjoyed it, so, and I just got a lot of joy from it, so yes, 6.
I think I have to agree as well, to be fair, because out of all the comics I read, I feel like this is going to be one issue that stuck with me for WizKid, and that alone speaks volumes, so happily 6 out of 6.
Alright. Well, I guess I'm the man out. I'm giving this 5 out of 6 because I do feel like it's not just the Cable. There's some of the artwork just doesn't quite. I don't know if it's the symmetry of the faces or whatever, but it just looks a little off to me. But otherwise, I thought it was a great issue.
Awesome. All right. Well, now we're going to get to the last book for the episode, which is going to be Inferno number 3, which. Is there are credits, I believe. Here we go. All right. No chapter titles for this one. Bold. All right. Written by Jonathan Hickman, penciled by a team of R.B. Silva, Stefano Caselli, and Valerio Schitti. Inked by Adriano Di Benedetto. Colors by David Carriel. Letters by Vicis Josephino and designed by Tom Mueller and Jerome Opeña and Frank Martin. Do the cover. I don't really like this cover. Is Professor X doing an action pose and Magneto as well, fighting some Nimrods, and it's pretty good, I thought. I don't remember Nimrod being three-fingered, but that's cool. what do y'all think of this cover?
I forget Opeña is one of the best modern superheroes.
Oh, man, yeah.
I just want to go back and read Uncanny X-Force now.
And that book he did with Rick Remender was visually stunning. Just stunning. But
this is my favorite cover out of all of them because it reminds me of a trading card.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I love how it's painted and it just looks great. And I love how they've not got brains, but even Xavier's trying to help.
I didn't even think about that. What the hell is he doing? Yeah, he's just like I'm trying so hard to find their consciousness. Where is it? Just pose. Pose and look cool and Magneto can cover my ass.
He's taking a note out of Star-Lord's book and is like, stop in the name of love.
I also appreciate that Opinion has decided to go, yes, it is a bucket for a head that Xavier is wearing.
Yeah.
So he's like really, really oversold like the giantness of that.
Oh yeah, it is huge on him.
I love it. I adore it. So.
Yeah, I really enjoy this cover.
The thing I quite enjoy is like this. It's like you're looking at two halves. You look at the top half and the bottom half, and the color and the way it's done is just so different. And I just like to think that for some magical reason, Magneto's powers are now pink, and the lovely hues that's bringing onto the Nimrods is just amazing.
I want his powers to be pink, that's for sure. Has everyone died?
I am here.
I'm here. Yeah, hold on just 1 second. I need to get Ollie a donut. Give me 1 second.
I want a donut.
I know. We get conscripted into doing this podcast every month, and we don't get any donuts.
That's
it. I'm going on strike until I get donuts.
Oh, Jason's not here. I saw Jason's picture. Oh, was it Denise's picture on Instagram of the boys? Oh, they're so adorable with the little Santa hats on. I was like,
oh, I don't follow Denise on Instagram. Oh, man, what is it? Maybe we should do that off. I don't know if she wants to be public with that.
Yeah, let's do it off. But she does amazing videos of...
I'm back!
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you'll have to let me know afterward.
I will. All right. Hope you aren't giving away any trade secrets, because I don't... Let's see. We'll say a minute, or an hour 15. Need to check that. All right. All right, so this is a hard one to synopsize. I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
There's meaty. It is real meaty. In a good way, I feel like. But
you could do it. Focus on Doug, focus on Mystique, and focus on the future.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm just going to do this one.
So we get kind of... So some of this R.B. Silva stuff, I really like the way they do this. So... It's some recycled scenery, but like the extended cut.
Yeah.
And we have scenes added in that we missed before. So we have Xavier recruiting Doug to come to Krakoa. He tosses him the duffel bag, tells him to get to work. We see the vision he actually shared with Doug of what Genosha... I'm sorry, what... Whoa, that's a different...
Wow.
What Krakoa could be. And then we get this kind of extra scene of we know that there's kind of been like the secret arm of Warlock. We actually find out that Warlock has been an integral part of the Krakoan design from the beginning, since Doug landed. And we find that Doug, much like, you know, some of us here on the podcast did at the beginning, just a general distrust of Xavier and what he's trying to do. And so... It's really interesting the way they explain it. So basically, the initial trade-off, while there's no one on the island, is that as Doug's basically, Warlock is basically going to insert himself into Krakoa, kind of phalanx himself with the vegetation, and they can feed off each other. So as Warlock grows, he'll feed off a little bit of Krakoa, but then Krakoa can in turn feed off some of the excess pieces of the techno-organic part, and they'll kind of sustain each other as they grow the island. And then, but they don't tell anyone that. That's Doug's secret. So his pivot to the leaders of Krakoa, Xavier Magneto, is that as the population grows, Krakoa can feed off the mutants just enough to not harm them, because there's enough of them there, that he can just do a little pinch off of everyone, and then no one will really feel it, and then Krakoa can flourish. And that allows him to keep Warlock's techno-organic meshing of the island completely secret, even from Xavier, which kind of begs the question, is there some way that Doug is using the techno-organic piece to block, or is Xavier just so blindly trusting of Doug that he's never been really a threat to anyone, and he just never thinks to take a look inside his mind? that's kind of maybe my only outstanding question from all this, but either way, it's a really brilliant plan. And you know, we talked about kind of the ideas of Hickman, and hoping we don't lose too much of that. Going back and showing how this has been seeded from the beginning was just classic, brilliant Hickman. Love it. But anyway, we'll talk about that when we talk about our feelings. So yeah, so that's kind of the Doug story, basically just inserting the techno-organic warlock into the island. And where that really comes into play when you find towards the end is that they find the shadow room that they're able to hide Moira in, and Doug is aware of it, and Krakoa cannot get in there. And so Xavier and Magneto feel really safe that they can, you know, not only hide Moira, but any other secrets they want. But Doug is able to use Warlock to penetrate that. So there's really nothing safe from Doug's kind of eyes and ears on the whole island, which is a really interesting kind of, it's definitely, Hickman's doing something really cool with Doug where he's kind of punching above his pay grade a little bit, and I love it. Because it kind of shows just really, he's never really been played as like this maybe genius or really strategic character, but his power set would almost make him that way. So I think kind of leveling him up is really satisfying. Then we have a scene with him and Beast, just Beast being dastardly. And so we kind of move from that kind of set up to the actual kind of plot of Destiny's Resurrection and Mystique. And we find out how, you know, kind of pissed off Emma is. You know, we had the X-Men issue, don't piss off Polaris, but man, do not piss off Emma Frost, because she is mad. And she kind of has a conversation with Mystique and Destiny, and doesn't really take their side, but makes it very clear that she is now against Xavier and Magneto, and kind of gives them the tools they need to do what they want. And her idea, which I really love Emma here, is she's just truly looking out for what she thinks is the best for the mutants under her care, which would be, I guess, Krakoa at large. And she doesn't really care if she has to hurt a few peers or leaders to get that. If she thinks it's what's best, she's going to do it. And that's what she does. And so she gives Destiny and Mystique some information about Moira. She reveals Moira to them. We find out that, and also tells them that she is a mutant, and about her powers and the past lives. And they all have this really vested interest, obviously, in preserving themselves in this timeline. And so they kind of make this non-plan together, Emma being very separated from it, kind of closing herself off, but giving them the means to enact their revenge, knowing that she feels like it'll help mutantkind in the long run. So then Moira is betrayed and captured by Orcus. The Magneto and Xavier have a conversation about Magneto's doubts. Xavier's like, well, it doesn't matter because we're doing what's best. But then he gets a psychic pain alert from Moira, and so they decide to go rescue her. Then we find out from on the Orcus Forge about Omega Sentinel being from a distant future and about the different timeline, and we get this really interesting, almost two competing truths, right? So Moira's whole bag this whole time has been, all my lives, mutants are destroyed. And so she's trying to build this perfect timeline where mutants eventually win. But then the Omega Sentinel consciousness comes back and is telling Nimrod, in all the futures, the mutants win, no matter what. You know, we tried joining technology and mankind together. That didn't work. Mankind tried helping mutants. Eventually, it didn't work. No matter what, the mutants always win. And if we want to preserve ourselves, we got to fight that. And we get some stories about, like, the Children of the Vault and Apocalypse coming back from Arako to defeat them. And, you know, we get all these different timelines about the Dominion. And no matter what, the mutants win. And by the way, gorgeous art throughout all this. Then we get kind of our text piece of the timeline and Omega Sentinel going back in time. And how she tricks this scientist into thinking he is from the future as well. And so the whole point of Orcus is the idea of using future knowledge to try to defeat the mutants. Magneto and Xavier trace Moira to this Orcus base, and everyone is slaughtered. And they're like, oh, wow, Moira really got mad. But then they kind of start feeling like maybe it's not Moira. And then we go to a scene with Moira and Destiny, I'm sorry, with Mystique and Destiny talking to Moira and saying they're not going to come find you. And then cut off and leave her arm at the base for Magneto and Xavier to find. They obviously have Moira somewhere else. And then they've also betrayed Xavier and Magneto because coming through the teleporting ring, they've been led to this trap where they knew that Nimrod and Orcus, led by some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, would come. And that's where we stop. And my goodness, what a comic book. I know I went through that really quickly and did not do it all justice, but there's a lot there, and it's all brilliant, I think. This is what I've been waiting for, really, since the end of Huxbox. And the first two issues were giving us, like, yeah, we're almost there, and this one, we're there. Like, we've arrived, and it's awesome. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Like you said, there was a lot going on, but the fact that they, like, really nicely separate into three parts just means you can just enjoy each part as you go through it. Mm-hmm. So you, like, enjoy Doug, you can enjoy the robots, you can enjoy Mystique, and of course Destiny. It's just, I can't deny what you're saying about the artwork as well. It is just lovely. And that one panel, especially with
the Phalanx thing.
Phalanx, yeah.
The that Dominion, is, yeah. Oh my gosh.
I keep going back to it. It's stunning. Yeah, I can't think of, yeah. Anyone else?
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, me? Okay. Right. So, this is, like, a meal, like, a five-course meal that's perfect, like, almost perfect. It has Grant Morrison-like ridiculous sentences, like, the, like, using the feet to fly the child of the sun, like, it is pure Hickman. There's, right, what I do love and will always love is not only does the narrative repetition, there is visual repetition of that beautiful image of Xavier reading Moira's mind in Huxbox, where it's like switches between her face, his face, and there is a lot of symmetry through this, and I really love the Emma, Destiny, Mystique faces.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
I think that for a man that is capping his story to just go, oh, by the way, the Children of the Vault got defeated. I will be able to finish that. I do appreciate that he's like, I'm going to try and touch everything that I tried to set up because I'm not going to finish it. So I'm just going to finish it in an alternate timeline. But like, this book is just people talking at people, and it is gripping. It's fuck the Snyder cut. The Hickman cut of Doug's like time on the island is by far my favorite part of this entire issue. The idea that the island just produces the free drugs. They just happen to produce the free drugs because it's feeding on so much mutant energy that it's just starting to produce things, and like it's just randomly producing things, and then there's not, like, a lot of this is not by design.
Right.
Like, it's like they just happened upon the drugs that will cure humanity.
Yeah, and the gate, like, okay, yeah, all right.
And it's the gate feels like it's not just now it makes sense why the gate has, like, almost like warlock like circles on it. It feels like Doug is and Warlock right. are manipulating certain things, and I admit when I first heard Doug's power all those many moons ago, that he just can translate anything, like, he's just the kid that's good at languages, I was like, oh, okay, you stood next to a werewolf and, like, a dude that is like a human rocket. I don't know if my childhood brain likes you most. I think, is it Zeb Wells that brought him back and made him into, like, he used his speech powers to, like, see body language and was like a Jason Bourne-esque
right.
dude. that was all cool. This, Doug, is what I want. A cool, calculating, very happy child that no one expects.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Xavier never read his mind, because I don't think anyone expects anything other than Doug. And the design of Warlock is my favorite. Like, I love Crazy Warlock, but I adore this, like, sort of, I'm like a sexy bachelor Warlock with slinky hair. I'm all down for this. I also love, do we call it Krakoan Lock or Kukolock? The sort of tree face that he created.
Yeah.
Good God. And then on top of that, we have Days of Future Past, but with like the Sentinel. And I thought that was such a great idea to like homage the kiddie going back, kiddie's consciousness going back, but this time it's a Sentinel. I thought that was a great like sort of. I still like X-Men comics from Hickman, and and on top of that, just seeing I'm not gonna call anyone out, but seeing actual gay rage on the page where two lesbians were like, "You took our love away, we're gonna fuck you over." Mm-hmm. I just appreciated it being done in such a mystique way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna speak forever. Everything looks great. Like the colors are brilliant, and I can't tell. Like I can tell each artist, and I'm leaning towards the Doug panels more than anything else. But I think it just. I'm just gonna talk forever. It's astonishing. Carry on, someone else.
So I mean, in general, it does look good. I do think Magneto looks horrible, though.
I don't think it was horrible, but yeah, we've agreed to disagree on Caselli before. It's not my favorite, but I don't think it's horrible.
He looks like his face design in those close-ups look like a different, a whole different series.
But he is still here in the series, which mm-hmm. doesn't even happen. So that's impressive.
Right. I just want to point to a few moments. How much I now hate Destiny for she's kind of a dick to everybody in horrible ways, like her interaction with the cuckoos. She's terrible and frightening and calculating. Like, I think it's a great character, but also they do a great job of like making you not like her, which is like, I love how they set it up. Like, you feel bad because they're not bringing Destiny back. And right when she comes back, you're like, oh, she's a terrible person. That's why they didn't bring her back, because she literally is trying to burn everything down, which makes no sense to me at all. Motivational wise, why she's like, all right, let's destroy all the mutants. Whatever. This is like Palestine, Israel. Why can't we all just get along? Anyway. So that moment was great. The moment of, boy, there's so much to flip through. I mean, the Doug moments were superb. It all feels more like wasted potential, you know, I could say about the Sword book. Like, this is Hickman doing his stuff. He's like, all right, here's the plan, and this is what I'm going to do. And everyone else in the office is like, nope, we don't like ideas. Can we just have, like, people in suits punching and shooting energy at each other again? We know how to do that. We don't want to have to, like, expand. So this is where his story is going to end, which is very sad because, I mean, there are hints of what could have been in the future, with his, like, he said there were like three mutant ages. So this would be the end of the first age, and the second age comes about, and what are we going to see? Here's a hint of it. Would have been age two and age three, but instead, you know, the ex-office was like, can we just punch, stab, shoot stuff? Shadow villains, because that's what we've been doing for forever, and we can't do anything else. I do want to pose this other question, because I saw this out there. Do you think the carnage at the Orcus station, do you think that was Sabretooth? Do you think Emma was able to bring Sabretooth out? Because he is having a book come out soon, right?
Yeah, he has a miniseries.
And him working with Mystique makes a lot of sense, and the way that all these people are just sort of the bodies are strewn about. I don't feel like it's the way that Destiny or Mystique would have handled the combat necessarily. So it feels very savage. So I'm just wondering if maybe he is out there. What do you guys think?
I did not think about that, but it makes total sense.
Yeah, I actually agree. Even with the arm being lopped off, feels very much more Sabretooth than... Actually, no, that feels very personal. That feels very Mystique.
Yeah.
But Destiny has always been, like, pretty much like a prick. So... Mm-hmm.
She did literally burn Moira alive just enough so I should remember how it felt.
Right.
It does feel like Destiny started this, though, right? It feels like she started it.
It feels very personal, and I feel like she doesn't... Because we've not really seen apart from Hoxpox, we haven't really seen Destiny and like how she's been characterized. So it felt very much when she talks to the Five and One, the Cuckoos, it felt very much like the Cuckoos are quite aloof. So I'm just going to like internally destroy them because I'm even more than them. Right. And it's a dicky move, but it was a really good scene.
It was. I totally agree. Scene. Yeah.
So, but. Maybe we'll get the dance off the cover promises next issue when Xavier poses and Magneto does all the heavy lifting.
Well, if you notice the end of the book, there are a bunch of like Orcus, like regular dudes in suits and stuff. So maybe that's what he's taking care of.
Yeah.
But the dance off sounds great. They should do a dance off. The pop and lock-a-thon and whichever team collapses first, then they lose.
Yeah. I also like the fact that Mystique and Destiny, the polar opposite of Magneto and Xavier, now in Moira's secret cave, so Doug will know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want after this, I don't think they will. As much as I love Magneto still resonating off of Colin Bunn's run, I kind of want to see them go to bed for a little bit, and I want to see Doug and Emma be like the king and queen of Krakoa. After this, like that's what I want.
Well, who is the? I forgot the front cover of that Immortal X-Men, because Emma's definitely on it, right?
They're both on there too.
So the whole Quiet Council will be there. I'm just hoping that maybe they do retire Xavier and Magneto for a little bit.
It'd be nice.
Maybe they get thrown into the little chamber.
Into the pit?
Or no, maybe they get thrown into the Moira chamber.
That's the Shadow Room or whatever.
What was that called? Stuck there.
I think I called it the wrong thing.
Affected without their memories. Of like.
That could be interesting.
Ooh. But you see, I see what you were saying, Georgie, about it feels like wasted potential. But I do think that Hickman is still there, sort of. He's supposed to be still there, guiding the ship a little bit, isn't he? So
I don't think so. I think they said he's still working on a book. I think like he's not gone from Marvel, and that he left his plans, which they may or may not follow. But I think it was more like, yeah, he's working on some other thing, but I don't think he's steering the ship anymore. Maybe I'm misremembering.
No. It does feel like they're going in a different way. I don't know. Out of a lot of people, I think Gillen will be very, very different. But at least he might pick up the baton for the interesting political side of Krakoa.
Sure. Yeah.
But we're not talking. As an issue, Inferno is insane.
It is. And it's crazy good. I'm with you, Dan. 6 out of 6 claws for me. This is what I'm.
Oh yeah, totally. Totally 6 out of 6.
And it's your Emma 6 out of 6.
Yay! Positive.
Yeah. So you know, it's funny. I actually did some quick math. I know we weren't all exactly the same. Some of you may vary a little bit, but even with giving Trial Magneto such a low score, this episode, my average score of the books was 5. That's a pretty good couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's considering how much Trial of Magneto dragged that down.
Right.
A nil score from you. So, like,
I didn't even read it.
Exactly, 0. You gotta give it the 0.
I'll give it 0.
Awesome. Well, so obviously, very excited to see where Inferno goes next and can't wait. I'll try to schedule us so that we get to talk about it fresh again, like we did, because you know, this one just came out. So I'll try to keep our next episode around the time when Inferno 4 comes out, if at all possible. Because I think that's definitely going to be the linchpin of our episodes for the next couple. But yeah, no, just man, what a great way to end the episode. So, guys, why don't you talk about Excalibur's a little bit?
So we put out an episode like a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. We're just back reviewing comic books because even though we are really liking Hawkeye, and you know, if you guys want to talk about that for a few minutes, I'm game. But we just felt like we were focusing too much on the MCU. But we're back reviewing comic books and loving it, even if the most recent books weren't the best books. We still had a good time chatting about it. How are you feeling about our return, Dan?
I'm happy to dive into, even if they are like, it's like wading through a marsh. I do enjoy just looking back and being like, oh God, all my nostalgia is evaporating. but no, I love talking comic books with you, Georgie, and all of you. It's fun. So I find it more pleasurable than, I think Loki was the worst decision we had.
Yeah, doing Loki was a bad decision.
We should have probably gone with Hawkeye.
Yes.
I really enjoy it. As always, you can find us, much like you can find this podcast, on podbean.com. But unlike /Snipcast, you can do /Excalibros, and you'll find us in all of our episodes. And you can find us on Twitter at Excalibros1. And you type us into Google, and we turn up, and we are on all of the other podcasting platforms that we can infest. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Yes, so go forth and listen. Ian, anything you want to talk about with these parts, like your art and design stuff? What's going on there?
Ooh, that's a question. Yeah. Well, in terms of the art and design stuff, I'm not going to be posting anything for a little bit. Hmm. But soon you will have a few short animations on Twitter, probably Instagram, of what is hopefully going to be a kid's cartoon hero.
Nice.
Nice.
But you can find me, if I can even remember what I go by on these things, on good old Twitter at Maze of the Gale, and ye old Instagram with SSJ Bakoa.
Nice. Very cool. And George, you want to do any personal plugs for your comedy stuff?
If you're in LA, I will be at the Ha Ha Cafe on Monday the 20th at 8 p.m. I believe Becca Ward is putting on the show. She's fabulous. So December is a tough month for people to come out and do stuff to try to save money. But the tickets are super cheap online. They're like $6. If you go to my Instagram, Jokey Georgie, and look in the bio, you can find a link to all the tickets, etc. excuse me. So I got that going on. I got more shows going on next year, but taking a little break to rest in between. But please check out my Instagram, Jokey Georgie, same as my personal. It's a K-I-E for Jokey, and then Georgie, G-I-E, for a lot of dark humor. thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, as always, for the podcast that goes SNIT, you can like the Facebook page. Twitter is at SNITcast. Show notes and stuff for snitcast.podbean.com. And yeah, trying to get back on a more regular schedule. Had a few bumps in the road and have a lot going on with the house and work and holidays and all that. But trying to get a little more regular. And as always, cannot thank the Excalibros and Ian enough for coming on and hanging out with me for a couple hours and just really, really had a blast. So until next time, everyone, stay safe, stay well. See you next time. Hugs and snicks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And snacked.